Hare Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we have three verses to touch on today. 10th Canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 59, verses 27, 28, and 29. Then chant the Sanskrit for verse 27. We've sent a little heads up to the school, and I see all the kids have their sheet in front of them. And Uzi asked it. You chant the Sanskrit. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevaya Vishnave Purushayadi Vijaya Purna Bodhaya Te Namaha. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevaya Vishnave Purushayadi Vijaya Purnam Bodhaya Te Namaha. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevaya Vishnave Purushayadi Vijaya Purnam Bodhaya Te Namaha. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevaya Vishnave Purushayadi Vijaya Purna Bodhaya Te Namaha. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Bhavan. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Madhurya Bhavan. Krishna Shah number one. Did I pronounce it wrong? Oh, Bhavan's only for the little ones. Oh, God, I'm sorry for the insult. My apologies. They're big kids now. I won't make the same mistake twice. You're the Bhavans.
All right. Word for word. Namaha. Obeisances. Bhagavate. To the Supreme Godhead. Tubhyam. Unto you. Vasudevaya. Lord Vasudev, the shelter of all created beings. Vishnave. All-pervading Lord Vishnu. Purushaya, the primeval person. Adi, original. Vijaya, the seed. Purna, full. Bodhaya, knowledge. Te, to you. Namaha, obeisances. Translation. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Lord Vasudev, Vishnu, the primeval person, the original seed. Obeisances unto you, the omniscient one. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Lord Vasudev, Vishnu, the primeval person, the original seed. Obeisances unto you, the omniscient. Obeisances unto you of unlimited energies, the unborn progenitor of this universe, the Absolute. O soul of the high and the low, O soul of the created elements, O all-pervading supreme soul, obeisances unto you. And text 29, translation. Desiring to create, O unborn master, you increase and then assume the mode of passion. You do likewise with the mode of ignorance when you wish to annihilate the universe, and with the mode of goodness when you wish to maintain it. Nonetheless, you remain uncovered by these modes. You are time, the Pradhana, and the Purusha, O Lord of the universe. Yet still, you are separate and distinct. The word Jagata in the third line of this verse indicates that the functions of creation, maintenance, and annihilation are here mentioned in a cosmic context. The word utkatam, indicates that when a particular function is being carried out, whether universal creation, maintenance, or annihilation, the particular material quality associated with that function becomes predominant. The three verses here, only the one has the purport. One thing that in these two verses that do not have anything, the second verse, the translation of this caught my attention in the second line of the translation. O soul of the high and the low, O soul of the created elements, O all-pervading supreme soul. Interesting thing, this acknowledges that there is a soul present in every aspect of creation, that every living entity, every aspect, every part of the creation has the personal presence of the Lord there, either in the form of the atom and the Lord residing there, or in the form of the super soul with the different living entities and the different species. But just in these simple words of this verse, this acknowledges one of the greatest debates or arguments of materialists, that there is no soul, that there is no presence of God. And here in this verse, very just not even made a point of, just casually noted, because this is understood by anybody with any type of spiritual understanding. So I was thinking, Srimad Bhagavatam, we make a study of Srimad Bhagavatam every day, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is basically filled with two different subjects. I see a lot of the kids have pens. I can assume they're either keeping themselves busy with very, very wonderful drawings, or they're taking notes. So if you happen to be taking notes, these are two good points to put down on your notes. Your teachers can quiz you on them later as they like. But there are two very particular topics that we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One is the pastimes of the Lord. Each of the chapters of the Bhagavatam is filled with some particular detail of the Lord's pastimes in his multifarious incarnations and his unlimited incarnations, and some many times appearing over and over. The second item is the pastime of the Lord's devotees. These are the two subject matters which we find repeatedly and continually throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, it's easy for us to understand the pastimes of the Lord. We have the Dasavatar, which gives us the different 10 main incarnations. We all know the different leelas. We've discussed them and grown up hearing them. But what are the pastimes of the devotee? What is it that the devotee is known for? Lord Vraha, who knows what Lord Vraha is known for? Which of the children? There was a hand back there. Somebody I can't see. All right. Swarga. Saving Bhumi the Earth. Okay. And then, of course, we have Lord Ramchandra. What's Lord Ramchandra known for? Someone else? So many people. Yes. Yes, he was the consort of Sita. Very good. And then, of course, we have Lord Parashuram. What's Lord Parashuram known for? Yes, killing all the demons. Yeah. So the different incarnations are very well known, but what are the activities of the devotees? Well, if we look in the previous verse, just a few verses back, verse number 22, we find three particular words that are good for us to note. Pranata, pranam, which means bowing down, archita, which means worshiping, and bhakti. Bhakti means devotion. One sentinel devotion is our prayerful presentation to the Lord. So these are the three things that are common to all of the devotees that we find mentioned and discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam, that they are engaged in bowing down before the Lord, that they are engaged in worshiping the Lord, and that worship manifests through the method of bhakti. So these are three things that we find. Verses, this middle section of the verses here in chapter 59, are Bhumi's prayers that she is offering to the Lord on behalf of trying to get some resolution to this difficult situation. But there's somewhere else in the Bhagavatam Bhumi offers prayers. Do any of the children know another section of the Bhagavatam where Bhumi offers prayers? It was mentioned just a few moments ago. Someone knows? No? Sarvi, no? Huh? Speak up. That wasn't the exact spot I was thinking of. Any of the adults know? Pretty simple one. Mother Ragatmaka. That's a good one, too. I was particularly thinking of Lord Vraha. Yeah, Vrahadev. I was particularly thinking of Vrahadev, whose appearance we've got coming up not too far down the road. So, at any rate, in this way, we see that this is the activity of the devotees, even if they're repeatedly in the Bhagavatam, this process of offering prayers. And the devotee, the interesting thing is, when the devotee glorifies the Lord, that's when the devotee becomes glorified. Why do we have these different personalities in the Bhagavatam? Not because, well, we just want to talk about this one or that one, but because they have engaged in the glorification of the Lord, and therefore they themselves have become glorious. This is the true wealth. This is the true quality of a devotee, is that by praising the Lord, they become praiseworthy themselves. So verse 29 now of these three verses, verse 29 speaks about the Lord in regards to the modes of material nature. The modes of material nature are something that some of us, many of us, are very much familiar with. There are three particular modes of material nature. Who from the school can tell me one of the three modes of material nature? Goodness is one of them. Passion is another. Ignorance is the third. Very good. So these are three modes of material nature that function within this world that we ourselves are impacted by quite often. Now, in the school, I think you had a guest that came last week and maybe talked about BFFs. Who remembers that? Who were the BFFs that were talked about? Yes, Ramchandra Kaviraj and Narottam Das. Very good memory. So now let's assume that you and one of your very close friends decide you want to build a fort. Maybe it's going to be outside in the backyard. Maybe it's going to be in the living room with tents and, you know, blankets and all, but you want to build a fort. Well, what's going to happen? You're going to get very passionate and very worked up about doing this. This is the mode of passion. It gives a lot of energy and a lot of movement, a lot of activity, and you're going to stretch it and be sure it's weighted down and there's a spot where it's high so you can crawl through and you can get in and maybe a little spot where there's a window. You really get into it. That's the mode of passion. Have any of you experienced that? Yeah. Now, then you get it all built and you go inside and it's all nice and it's in there, but you know, you want to keep it up for a while. You don't want to just take it down, so you want to take good care of it. You want to be sure that everything's kept straight and the, you know, weights are all in the right spot so it doesn't sag, and you know, maybe even clean it out, and if you're eating some snackies in there, you clean up the snackies afterward. Which mode is that? Goodness. Because you're maintaining it. You're taking care of it. You're seeing that it stays nicely. So that's the mode of passion and the mode of goodness. But now let's assume you and that friend get into a big disagreement. You get real upset with each other. And you get real angry and you, well, I'm just taking this down. And you start tearing it apart and ripping it down. Which mode is that? Ignorance, yes. So you have all three modes present, and you can see how they're there in your life. And this isn't just for the kids. This is for the adults, too. We all experience this, the impact of these modes. So this pushing of these different modes in our life is something that we really struggle with. Now, Krishna is the best friend of all the living entities, Sudridam Sarva Bhutanam. He's always looking out for our well-being. So even if we're not being attentive to him, he creates this material world for us. He maintains it all for us. And in due course of time, when it's necessary, it's destroyed and it starts all over again because it is, after all, temporary. But the interesting thing is, unlike us, when you're building that fort and when you're taking good care of it, or when you get angry with your friend and you tear it all to pieces, when Krishna creates the material world for us, he is not impacted by these modes of material nature. The word in Sanskrit used in this verse is para. It means he's separate and distinct from the modes. Separate and distinct from the modes of material nature. We are constantly struggling with these three modes and the impact that they have on our life. Whereas Krishna simply is there observing. He's actually the one controlling the modes. Some of you may have seen this picture of Krishna doing the puppets. Vishnu's there doing the different puppets, the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. That's how he controls it. He's not controlled by it. We're controlled by the modes of material nature. Now let's take this a step further and see if any of you know this. Each of these three modes has a personality that is responsible for overseeing the activities of the living entities controlled by that mode. Now, who controls the mode of goodness? Nobody?
Speak up. I can't hear you. Who did she say? Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu. Yes, very good. Okay. Now, who controls the mode of passion? Lord Brahma. Very good. And then the last one, who controls the mode of ignorance? Everybody knows this one. Kind of, sort of. Yes. Lord Shiva. Yes. So these are the three personalities, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, that control each of these different modes according to the particular qualities of the persons that are in that mode, that are affected by that. But nonetheless, they are not so adept at staying free from it, para, separate and distinct, as Krishna is. Sometimes you see that they're very much wrapped up in it, in different pastimes, both those that involve direct Krishna and those that involve their interactions with each other. You see that they are impacted by the modes of material nature. Now, Krishna, he's able to stay completely uninvolved in that. How does he do that? Some of us may know that in different spy thrillers, they always have this factor where the people carrying out the activities keep the person in charge uninformed. It's called plausible deniability. That way, Namamrita doesn't know that there's this plotting and activity going on over the people that he's overseeing, because they don't tell him. So that keeps him out of the loop, so that when everything falls apart, I didn't know anything. We sometimes hear different political leaders speak like this. I can't remember. I didn't know. So this is called plausible deniability, by keeping it distant from it. So how does Krishna create this plausible deniability? Through having these activities engaged in by personalities that act on his behalf, such as in this case of creation, Lord Shiva, through his form of Sambhu. Now, as interesting as it seems, and as much as we're all very happy here talking about Krishna and attending the school and looking at the deities, the fact of the matter is, we're in the world where pradana and kala are present, material elements that are impacted by time. Just like in a few minutes, you're all going to get up. Oh, time to go to class. Okay, finished. Because you're controlled by time. Oh, time to go to recess. Oh, time to have lunch. Like that. In the spiritual world, there is no time. You don't have any limits on what service you're doing for Krishna at any time. Always, just whatever service, you know. So the fact that there's time present and the fact that there's these material elements that are functioning at the time makes this a dirty place. Even though we're engaged in spiritual activities, it's still within this realm. So Krishna keeps this distance from it by empowering these different personalities to act on his behalf. So in this way, even though we're very proud of this place and we're very happy that we're here and we think so much about it, the fact of the matter is that it's not any place that a genuine spiritual personality desires to go to. So therefore, the process of creation is done through different agencies that are under Krishna's control, but not directly involving him in it. Lord Shiva is very much known for this in his expansion, Ishambhu. He puts the energy into the material elements so that the life generates through them, and they begin to function in this way. So this is the process by which Krishna creates this ability to make sure it's all going on, but at the same time, keep distant from it. So in these verses here from Mother Bhumi, we see that, she's very much appreciating Krishna's presence, but at the same time glorifying his separate energies that are not so directly involved. Time for you all to go? Yeah? All right. Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming for Srimad Bhagavatam class. Oh, just some of them. Anyway, they'll figure it out. So, now, the interesting thing about the modes of material nature and how we're either impacted by them
or identify with them in spite of our own spiritual consciousness, this all takes a back seat when we speak about the temporary nature of these modes. We hope within the execution of our devotional service to remove ourselves from that influence of the modes of material nature. This is what we strive for. And, of course, we do that by understanding the modes and what is their impact. Each one of the modes has a particular different quality and different nature in this. Of course, the Bhagavad Gita is very, very clear on this. The fact that the Gita, which we understand to be the fundamentals of our devotional philosophy, that the chapter 14 gives so much information on this, it strengthens the understanding that this is a very important point to realize what are the modes and how do they impact us and how do we become free of them. In the chapter 14 here, Krishna says that the manifestations of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. In other words, everything about one appears to be of a higher realm of existence. One has knowledge and information that allows one to act in a way that is above the influence of these lower modes. Then Krishna goes on to explain, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruitive activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering begin to develop. And we've all seen this. This is a very accurate description of basically everyone we come in contact with out there in the material world that's not practicing the process of devotional service. They're always developing great attachments to everything. They're pushed by the constant desire to endeavor beyond the means. I mean, I know people that work 2, 3, 4 jobs sometimes, you know, just to accumulate whatever they're trying to accumulate, you know. So this desire just to hanker and increase their possessions, very uncontrollable. This is all the mode of passion. And Bhagavad Gita continues that when there's an increase in the mode of ignorance, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion, we find an interesting combination of both passion and illusion in most people within this material world. They're driven by this desire to want to do more and accumulate more and control more, but at the same time, it's an illusion. It causes madness. And that madness is they begin to identify with the body and begin to identify other living entities as those bodies instead of a spirit soul, and it completely jades the vision of what they see. So this is how we understand the distinction of the impact these different modes have on us and who's acting according to which of these modes. Another good thing about the mode of goodness is that through the mode of goodness only, one is able to develop knowledge. Through that mode of goodness is the process to develop knowledge. Because even in an academic situation, you have to be very regulated, very attentive to studies and classes and textbooks and things, and that's how you can acquire that knowledge. It requires some degree of control. You see sometimes those students that are in colleges that are just completely, as they use the word, party animals. They don't really have much intelligence. Their development of knowledge through that process of their so-called education doesn't manifest because they're controlled by these other modes instead of by the mode of goodness. Another positive quality of the mode of goodness is it removes sinful reaction. So everything we're reading in this 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is very clear that if one wants to begin this process of not being impacted by the mode of passion and ignorance, that one has to situate themselves in the mode of goodness. One becomes happier, and one develops a higher understanding of knowledge by this process. But there is a drawback to that. And that drawback is that as long as we're functioning under any one of these three modes of material nature, there's constant competition. The competition is for the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance to take prominence because they're all present. So if you've got the mode of goodness, you may be settled very nicely, but passion and ignorance are always nipping at your heels, as they say, always trying to look for that little spot and make their way in. And if one is in the mode of passion, then ignorance is trying to dominate. So all of the modes are constantly battling this way. Here again from the Gita, Sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance, and at other times, ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, the three modes are constantly in competition for supremacy. So how is it that being a living entity who is impacted by the modes of material nature and the conditions of this material world, that we keep ourselves from being overpowered by these three modes? I mean, we may think, okay, the mode of goodness is good, and the mode of goodness is better than passion and ignorance, but as far as the process of devotional service, the mode of goodness is not really the best situation to be in. So how do we reach what is described as sudha-sattva, pure goodness? That is by the practice of our sadhana. That practice of sadhana is what gives us the strength to hold off the material energy. I repeatedly told all of my kids as they were growing up that you've got yourself, the jiva, and the material energy. And when the material energy wants to come forward, the jiva has no ability to hold it at bay. No ability whatsoever. So if you insert something between you, some kind of block, and that block being Krishna, the process of devotional service, which manifests itself as sadhana, then that can hold the material energy at bay because the spiritual energy is stronger. Therefore, we have the process of daily performing sadhana, daily rising early, daily executing devotional activities. This becomes our foundation, not on a weekly basis, not every couple of times a month, but on a daily basis to develop this foundation, because every day we come in contact with the modes of material nature, every single day. So that means that every single day we have to have some type of sadhana, some type of practice that gives us the strength to hold off the onset, the nipping at the heels, if you will. I always, in my own personal life, I'm constantly trying to balance that impact of the three modes as I go about my daily activities of working and mixing with the non-devotees and the impact of moving through the material. We all experience this. There's very few sitting in this room that just, you know, sit in this room all day. Most of us have something that puts us in direct contact, head-on, with the material energy. Whether we're preaching, whether we're educating, whether we're working, we're directly head-on with the material energy. So the only process by which we can get over that is the sadhana. And we have to understand this very clearly. Reminded me, some of you of a certain age group may remember an old show called Radio Ram. Why is it some mornings you wake up and you feel like you can take on the entire world, and other days you can barely get out of bed? Radio Ram, Understanding the Three Modes of Material Nature, coming soon. Anybody remember that? Besides me? It was a whole radio show they did like this, you know, back in some previous decade. I don't remember. It was really quite entertaining. But, you know, this is the way it is. Unless we have this sadhana, we are simply going to be tossed about by the waves of the material nature, tossed about by the constant struggle of goodness, passion, and ignorance, fighting for the direction of our life, fighting for the activities that we're trying to perform. So hopefully, by settling ourselves in the process of devotional service, by executing our sadhana, by staying in the association of devotees, by attending the temple programs, taking part in the different devotional activities, these are the things which will give us freedom from that impact of the three modes of material nature. Nothing else. Doesn't matter how much Ashtanga yoga, it doesn't matter how much meditation, doesn't matter how much austerity, doesn't matter how much renunciation, none of these things by themselves, excuse me, none of these things by themselves are going to get us free from the mode of material nature. But what will get us free from the modes of material nature is the regular performance of devotional service. Now, there's an interesting point that I wanted to touch on the first verse of this group, verse 27, to revisit that Sanskrit, Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevaya Vishnave Purushayari Bijaya Purna Bodhayate Namaha. This first line, Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam. This is a verse that's found many places in the Bhagavatam. I found a number of spots where it's referred to. One place, the earliest place we see it, is in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fifth chapter, in the pastimes of Lord Vyasadeva. The second place we find it in the Bhagavatam is in the sixth canto, in chapter 18, the activities of Chittaketu. And the third place we find this is in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the tenth chapter, in the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj. Now, there's a common factor in all three of those spots. Anybody know what it is offhand? Narada Muni is involved in all three. In addition, before I do that part, let's just look at this. Vyasadeva's in chapter 5 of the first canto, this is the instructions of Narada Muni to Vyasadeva. And he quotes this Sanskrit phrase, Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam. And then there's two different ways it goes. The second line is different in several places in the Bhagavatam. In chapter 18 of the sixth canto, Chittaketu, this is the instructions of Narada Muni to Chittaketu. And in chapter 10 of the seventh canto, this is Narada Muni instructing Yudhisthira Maharaj, telling him about the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, which has this same factor in it. So this is a verse that apparently Narada likes quite a bit. Now, the interesting thing is that I'll just take a leap here and say this is actually one of Narada's favorite verses, because when he gives specific instructions to Chittaketu in the sixth canto, he gives him a mantra. This mantra will give you deliverance. And the beginning of that mantra is Om Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam. So Narada likes this a lot. So it's one of those mantras that we can, and it's a very easy one. If you look at this verse here, Om Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevana Vishnave, it's very easy to chant. And if you read the translation, it's very, very simple to remember. So it's a very nice verse to meditate upon, something that we can conclude is quite meaningful to Narada Muni, who is essential in our instructions in the process of devotional service. So we can conclude from this that this process of offering prayers, this process of offering these different glorifications, which we see repeatedly, the pastime of Vyasadeva, the pastime of Chittaketu, and the pastime of Prahlad, as well as the pastime of Mother Bhumi here, of regularly giving this worship to the Lord, is what will actually give us great strength in our own devotional service. Whether we're repeating the prayers of the great personalities of the Bhagavatam, or whether we're repeating prayers from our own heart, this is another point, that the prayers that we offer from our heart according to time and circumstance of our situation are equally pleasing to the Lord. They don't have to be prayers elaborately constructed in some Sanskrit language. The Lord is the master of all languages. The Lord knows the language of the birds, of the animals. He certainly knows a little bit of English. Maybe some Russian, Ukrainian, whatever else we got present in the room, a little bit of Spanish. You know, so the Lord knows all these languages. So whatever your language is, you offer that prayer to the Lord will hear it, and he will act upon it. This is the process of vandana. Now, our acharya for vandana is Akura. When Kura was taking Krishna and Balaram and then saw the forms of the Lord and his majesty, he offered such wonderful prayers, and he became known for that. We can venture a bit closer to our own timeline, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, which we've got a lot of Chaitanya appearance events coming up over the next few weeks, Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya's process of offering prayers to the Lord actually caused the Lord to appear. So we can understand that if we, with a sincere heart, offer these prayers to the Lord, as we see Mother Bhumi is doing here in this particular section of the Bhagavatam, it can and it should inspire us as we continue on in our devotional service. So we'll finish there, right on time with what the little note on the desk here says. And take just two or three questions if there are any. Keep it short because I don't want to go over time. I'm trying to keep a good reputation so I get invited back. Yes, Madame Mahamprabhu.
When you were speaking of the modes of nature, it appeared that you were presenting it in a negative light. In a negative way about the modes of nature, that there would be some reason we'd want to not get involved with them.
Well, it's not me presenting it that way. It's the Bhagavad Gita chapter 14 presenting it that way.
So I was wondering if you could explain it, because a lot of us, when the modes come, we don't immediately reject them. So your instructions were that we should, and I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of insight on how these modes are not good for us.
Well, the fact of the matter is that that insight comes from having more the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness brings knowledge. And we get the mode of goodness by being regulated in activities that will raise our consciousness. It's the precursor to being able to execute sadhana. You know, somebody that's in the mode of ignorance or somebody that's in the mode of passion doesn't have the ability to execute sadhana properly.
So what's wrong with the modes of nature?
They bring down our consciousness to a mundane level. And the process of devotional service is all about elevating our consciousness to a spiritual level.
So there's something beyond mundane consciousness.
Well, you're talking like a newcomer here. Come on, you know more than I do.
I don't know.
Read chapter 14, you'll understand all of this. John Master Prabhu.
Very nice class, Prabhu. You were saying that if we simply execute sadhana, then this will insulate us from the influence of the modes of material nature.
Yeah, if we properly execute our sadhana, it will insulate us from the modes of material nature, correct?
One point, is one of my favorite references in the preface to Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says that advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent upon the attitude of the follower. So it seems like sometimes we go through our sadhana practices like automatons, but really, in order to achieve what you're suggesting, it seems that the attitude of the devotee is of primary importance in order to actually get that relief from the influence of the modes.
So is comment? There a question or a comment? Because it's an accurate comment.
I wondered if you could expand on that.
Well, the fact of the matter is that our consciousness is going to be, it's one of the things that is directly impacted by the modes of nature. If our consciousness is in the mode of goodness, for instance, which is a precursor to sadhana, then that mode of goodness develops a detachment from being the controller, a detachment from material possessions, a detachment from thinking ourselves the doer. All of these things help to situate our consciousness in a better spot for executing our sadhana. Our consciousness has to be on the same level of the devotional practices we're doing for it to be completely successful. There will be some degree of success, but if I'm chanting my japa in the mode of ignorance, we've seen that, you're not going to get the same result as if you're very attentive and very focused on the sound vibration and the 16 syllables of the Maha Mantra. Similarly, if I'm executing my process of cutting the vegetables for the cooking in a very passionate way, I may not pay attention. I may cut my finger. Now the whole offering's ruined. So, yeah, our consciousness has to have a direct link to the way that we're executing our devotional service. I mean, that just makes sense. Namamrita, then Prangovinda.
In the beginning of the class, you mentioned that Krishna is present everywhere, including in the atoms. I never thought of that. I just wanted to get a confirmation. So this atoms kind of form everything. So if you look
at Krishna's everywhere.
So if you look at a rock, we should actually see that as being Krishna just as much as the soul in the human being, the super soul in the human being.
Well, here again, Bhagavad Gita does teach that Abrahma Bhuvana Loka. I'm sorry, that's not the right one. Humble sage for virtue of true knowledge. Somebody give me the first on that. Vidyamanaya sampani brahmani yagahasmi suni chavis pakicha pandita samadarshana. The pundit sees everything equally. So, not just the moving living entities, but realizes the Lord is present in all of his creation. Now, of course, I mean, we have to be practical. I can't step on the rocks, can't step on the plants, so I'll just stand here the rest of my life. You have to be functional, you know, but at the same time, we do want to see Krishna's presence and appreciate his creation like that.
Krishna is in the atom, and then I assume it's a morning walk because they are asking. So then Prabhupada says, Krishna is not alone in the atom. And I paid attention to see here, Prabhupada said, Krishna is with his entourage. The whole associate, whole dham, everybody is there. And my brain could not comprehend. In the atom, the whole holy dham, everybody is there.
So in the rock, Krishna is present. That's why we worship Govardhan Shilas.
I have one nice reference, as you say, Prabhu, about English. Bhavananda Prabhu, every day evening in Mayapur, early 80s, we used to have a discussion at Prabhupada in Prabhupada's garden. One day he says he was feeling sad because Srila Prabhupada appointed Jayapataka Maharaj and Bhavananda Maharaj to be in Mayapur in charge. So we were Bhavananda's group, Bhavananda Prabhu's group. So one day he told Prabhupada, he was making the beddings for Prabhupada, and Prabhupada came in that room and he says, Prabhupada, I did not become qualified. Jayapataka picked up Bengalis, he can speak, but I did not. I don't know what will happen when I go to spiritual world. How am I going to correspondence with Krishna? And Prabhupada smiled and he says, Krishna knows English very well and he will speak to you only in English. So do not worry.
Yes, this is true. All right. Mother Ragatmaka? Yes. Removes sinful reactions. That's in the 14th chapter of the Gita.
Oh, can you?
Probably not, but I can give you the verse number.
One more question. When you speak of the creation, or, you know, yeah, the creation, then we think of, okay, Lord Brahma is in charge of the motive, passion, and creation. But then, of course, we hear the, on the other hand, Lord Shiva, Shambhu, is involved in the creation. And in fact, so many Indians see Shiva as the father and Durga as the mother.
Right.
Can you make a distinction here, or what? Or is it both? Could we just...
The process of creating the material world as we see it falls under Lord Brahma. The process of infusing into the pradhana the unmanifested elements, that falls to Shambhu. So there's a subtle difference there in the two activities of creation. One is in the overall making it become alive, so to speak, and then the other one is in creating the different, like in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, again, Brahma creates all the different types of living entities and bodies and things like that. But it's all being created from the pradhana. 12 and 13 and 14. Check those verses. That's where I got that from. Yeah. All right, we'll finish there. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.